Start off by thanking CETA for this invitation to speak. I think it's critical that CETA and the society interact more, maybe, than they have in the past. I like to think that, well, obviously we know the society is doing very well based on budget and membership. It's nice to think that the entomology departments are doing as well, since I think the two are clearly tightly linked. However, there certainly is clear that there are some major challenges for departments of entomology, and I'm going to talk about that from the perspective of sort of research and research funding. This slide, although it may be difficult to see in the back, sort of forms a template for my entire presentation. So down the middle, we really have the entities that are at play here. We've got the university, and I'm going to violate a fundamental rule since trying to use that pointer I think I would have difficulty with. Universities, most are land grant and are therefore dependent on sort of state funding, and that's volatile and kind of varies from year to year, so that's almost a separate issue. You know, we've got colleges within the university, and I think, you know, we have a tendency to think about departments of entomology, but in fact, I think it's the strength and health of the college that's really at stake from several different perspectives. I think the college has to interact within the university and really compete with other colleges for resources basically from within the campus. So it's critical that entomology be a contributing factor to that, but an integrating factor across other departments in the college. And I'm going to talk about that as I go through this presentation. The other issue certainly is we have the Ag Experiment Station. That is part of most of the appointments of researchers and extensionists and teachers that are in the college. And I would say that that's a complicating factor in terms of the overall funding and sort of acknowledgement of where the college fits on a university campus. And I'm going to try to address that in this presentation as well. Surrounding this, I sort of have put what might be considered maybe the more traditional sources of funds, and then over here I've listed what I think probably would be perhaps maybe new sources of funds that we need to go after in order to maintain active programs as faculty members in departments. We've got internal aspects, and obviously there's startup, and really the only thing I think you get now as a professor is maybe some startup, hopefully some startup, but then you get a license to hunt for grants. So the idea that you're going to get sustained support from within the university, I think that's gone out the window a long time ago. And I think startup is also related to the Ag Experiment Station, and I'm going to talk about that as I go through this presentation. You know, there are traditional sources of funding within the state, and it depends on what state you're part of. You know, certainly there's issues related to water and pesticides, and there's funds there. There's school IPM, there's more of a focus on urban aspects, so I think there have been opportunities there. I think entomologists have done very well exploiting those. We've got commodity groups, and I'm going to talk about that in the next few slides, and I think that's a blessing and a curse at the same time, and I'll explain that as I go through the presentation. You know, certainly the idea of getting federal funds is a big deal. So we've got USDA, ARS, CREES, and then, of course, we've got specific cooperative agreements. We've got funding from NSF and NIH and DOE and National Institute of Aging. And I think, you know, our faculty have been pretty good at developing those funds. There are some problems there, and I'm going to allude to that as I go through this presentation. We've got private industry as well, certainly the ag chem industry, a big supporter of many, many programs. Biotech now has entered the picture. I think we've been very good sort of exploiting those resources. And then on a global perspective, WHO, there's BARD, there's FAO, USAID, these collaborative research support programs that I think entomologists have been very, very active in. Those are sort of traditional areas of funding. Now, over on the right-hand side, obviously, we've got a lot more involvement now with foundations. I just put three up here. There's many more. There's Kellogg. There's David and Lucille Packard Foundation. There's obviously the Gates Foundation that, you know, has big grants, basically. And obviously, everyone is trying to compete for those. But, you know, the issues that they're focusing on, obviously, nutrition, hunger, diseases, you know, global climate change, the idea of sustainable agriculture, and I don't think individual faculty per se, I think everybody realizes this, you really can't go after that funding sort of by yourself. You need to be part of a team, and I think the college, university, really needs to come to the fore and support that overall effort, otherwise it's going to be very difficult to secure that funding. And I'm going to talk about that with respect to sustainable agriculture, where I think at least a lot of entomologists do fit. Certainly they do under the disease context as well, but again, I'm going to talk about sustainable ag here. Other foundations and private industry, you know, with respect to the idea of energy and biofuels, I mean, it's remarkable. Chevron, BP, other organizations have stepped up with literally hundreds of millions of dollars. You know, whether entomologists can factor into that funding equation, you know, there is a place. I know some people have been successful, but again, you're in that in terms of being part of a team. That clearly, it's a campus-wide or college-wide effort to try and secure funding from these sources. We have been very, very good at exploiting this concept of invasive species. So that's an area that continues to be very important, and people applying for those funds, being successful. I put down colony collapse disorder here as maybe being one of the more recent ones, and I think that sort of falls into this category, the emerald ash borer. There's also sort of maybe a negative aspect here. I think once people start getting funding from these under this sort of topic, there's a tendency for maybe the funding to go on long after the pest really is that much of a problem. So there's a dark side to that as well. And then the last thing I'll discuss a little bit in more detail is the idea of overseas funding. You know, it's very clear that there's a focus now on international collaboration like there has never been before. You know, certainly China is a big source of potential collaboration and potential funds, and I think a lot of universities are aimed there as well. So again, just a brief overview, and I'm going to touch on some of these areas as I go through this presentation. You know, at the federal level, and again, I don't think any of this information is new to most of you, but basically there's a huge diminished capacity. The base funding lines for research and extension at the federal level, USDA, CREES, have not grown in 10 plus years. And actually, I took some of these slides from that CREATE 21 program that is still being discussed, and I think many of you are familiar with that. Just continuing on with this theme, you know, basically, you compare CSREES-based funding lines to other federal science efforts, and it's abysmal, basically. There's really been no real growth, whereas a lot of the other funding sources at the federal level have increased dramatically, as you can see from this graph. And then the last slide, if it actually comes up, it's very dramatic. This must be a dramatic slide here. Let's see. Maybe this is going to come up in pieces. Here we go. Okay, funds have actually declined. And again, this is not news to anyone, but if you look at basically the decline in constant dollars from 1997 to 2005, experiment station down dramatically, extension, you know, hit even more so. And I think we're all affected by this. It's dramatic, as opposed to looking at increases in the NIH as well as NSF. I mean, it's absolutely incredible. So that's one of the reasons I think that underlines the fact that agricultural research, you know, there needs to be more support. There needs to be something done differently at the federal level. Otherwise, we're just going to continue to see this erosion. It's one of the underlying aspects under CREATE 21. I admit that there are some problems with that, certainly, but it just seems like if we continue on this same course, you know, I really don't see there being a course correction and something, unless something dramatically different is done. So in a sense, that's kind of gloom and doom. So let's switch from federal support and look at what's happening at the commodity level. And there, I guess it really depends on what commodity you're associated with. And I'm going to switch gears here and not really talk about entomology, but rather talk about plant sciences, and then specifically within the plant sciences about viticulture and enology. You know, a huge program certainly on the Davis campus. There's grapes and there's wine being produced in almost every state. I think a lot of states now, a lot of colleges rather, have people focusing on viticulture and enology as far as research goes, and it's considered a sort of an up-and-coming area. So, you know, what is the landscape for funding for viticulture and enology? Something that you would think would be, you know, very, very positive, but in fact it's not. It's fairly dismal. And there's the National Grape Wine Initiative, this NGWI. It's at the federal level, and in fact this is from the template from their website, so they have a website if you want to look this up. You know, basically this is part of a workshop, but it's a national effort to try and get sort of an initiative at the federal level to support research in the area of viticulture and enology. And why is this? The reason for that is there really is hardly any money available for research in this area. It's very, very difficult for these folks to sort of go to USDA and try to get funding for viticulture and enology. It doesn't seem to be a priority within that large framework, and it's difficult to get money even if it is a priority. So there is a publication that I downloaded, at least I scanned here, very timely for this presentation, basically. So this is a trade magazine, simply a trade magazine, called Wines and Vines. And maybe you can look at wines in a couple of different ways. Basically, it is from December 2007, so this month's issue of Wines and Vines. And basically, the lead story in this is probing the research gap, and I'll read it here if you can. Is industry-wide funding sufficient to compete with imports while U.S. market share shrinks? And so basically, it talks about the dismal aspects and prospects of trying to get money if you're a researcher working in the area of viticulture and enology. And I probably should hit this button a little sooner, since obviously this is this presentation is a challenge for this computer. Obviously, I did this on a Macintosh, and since it's a Mac, there would be no problems at all. So basically, what this slide is going to tell you is it's gonna we look at United States, we look at Australia, and in a sense, this is information about the funding available, production value. And again, I'll read this since you probably can't see it. About $11 billion in the United States, $5 billion in Australia. Industry funds for R&D in the United States, $1.2 million, $10.5 million in Australia. Government funds for research and development is $0.9 million in the U.S., $13.2 million in Australia. So total R&D for viticulture and enology in the United States is about $2 million. It's $23.7 million in Australia. So in that context, just looking at where then is the major advances in technology going to be? Is it going to be in the United States? Is it going to be in Australia? It's a huge challenge to compete with funding at that level. And if you compare sort of viticulture and enology in the U.S., you compare it just to California and how insightful, I guess, or far thinking that the dairy industry is, that basically, of course, it's a huge industry, no question about that, but they put up about $10.1 million in research every year. So if you're into, you know, basically this area, there is funding available. Again, there is not with respect to a viticulture and enology. And I pulled another piece out of this article that I thought was really interesting, and I think it speaks to sort of young professionals in departments of viticulture and enology on college campuses. But I think we all can relate to it, and I will read it. Okay, basically, first it talks about the fact that the average grant, these grants, if you look at what is doled out, the average grant is about $42,000 a year. It's clear that there are not armies of researchers working on these projects. Moreover, many college professors need to hire a critical mass of students seeking master's and doctoral degrees to keep their departments and their careers vital. And it talks about Cornell University in the next line. Okay, so they often don't rely on one graduate student at a time. Dr. Ramon Mira de Orduña, who is at Cornell University, and I assume that's a real person working in viticulture and enology, said that younger professors not yet tenured usually need to publish two or three times a year, have three or four students on their team, ideally including a postdoctoral person, and be graduating good people to go on to other universities or jobs, all of which help those junior professors get their tenure. So, you know, with that expectation, you're hiring a young faculty member in viticulture enology, and you know, you look at that, and it's not out of line for what we sort of expect from our students as well. And obviously, this might be on the high end, clearly, and depending on the work that you do, I realize that. But at the same time, the demand to try and do all of this, the average graduate student, the cost, I think, in the U.S. for entomology departments is between probably $35,000 and $45,000 a year. You have three or four students in your lab. As a young professor, you know, it's going to cost money. You need a research technician. You want to hire a postdoc. And given this limited amount of funding available at the federal level and from commodities, it certainly is a huge challenge. It is coming. So basically, this is my shot for San Diego. We have a young faculty member that's going to go out there to surf the waves of academia, and obviously there are some major challenges that this person is going to have to deal with. I'm going to shift gears now and talk about this funding as it comes into college campuses, and I'm going to use Davis as an example. So basically, this is a publication that we put out every year, and I suspect you all do as well. Came out October 19th, you know, talking about the research funding that the campus brings in. And so basically, we topped about a half a billion dollars, about $532 million in research funding, which I guess is great. What's more important, though, is to look down at each, at sort of where the money is coming from. So certainly our School of Medicine, and I think having schools of medicine on College of Ag campuses is both a blessing and a curse. Basically, that brought in $148 million. That's the number one entity on the campus. Then in second place, here's the College of Ag and Environmental Sciences. You know, we brought in $85 million. So that, you know, that sounds great. So we're in second place. So in that sense, we're looking at, you know, being, you know, fairly highly regarded in terms of extramural funds. But there is a problem with our funding. And basically, a lot of our funding comes from commodity groups, comes from USDA, comes from specific cooperative agreements, and there's no overhead associated with that. So our average overhead in the college for that $85 million, I think, comes down to be about 19%. So in fact, if you look at our $85 million and what it means to the campus in terms of overhead, it's much, much smaller than the College of Engineering or the College of Biological Sciences, even though they may bring in less. So this overhead idea, you know, is not going to go away, and it's very clear that there is a huge, huge focus on that.
Four minutes.
Okay, so I'm not going to get nearly through where I wanted to be. I really like this slide because I think it speaks to a lot of the challenges that we face as a college, and we'll see how far I go from here. Basically, on the Davis campus, we have a split, and I think a lot of places are like this. So, in a sense, we have an INR appointment, and usually the college is split between 50% INR, most of the faculty, and then 50% AES. And the way I like to separate these two out is that we have INR is actually academic freedom. So that's what, if you're in the physics department, if you're in the history department, you have a 9-month, 100% INR appointment. And so that focuses on instruction, disciplinary research, and then there's a service component as well. If you have an appointment in the AES, it's a bit more than that. So I like to refer to it as sort of academic obligation. You lose, in a sense, a degree of freedom if, in fact, you have an AES appointment. So there is an expectation that you do mission-oriented research. So you're addressing a societal need. You have stakeholders. You have clientele groups. You're doing research that's targeted towards problem solving. And then there's outreach associated with that as well, getting the results of one's research out to society. And then there's a service component that probably relates over here as well. So the issue then between INR and AES and this balance and the expectation between the two is absolutely a huge challenge. You know, in this regard, you're expected to sort of do disciplinary research and bring in extramural dollars at the federal level for overhead. At the same time, I think what we have done, and at Davis campus and maybe others have been guilty of this, is that probably for the past 20 years, we have focused over here in hiring people and we have ignored this. And I would say that we have done that at the peril of the College of Ag and Environmental Sciences. And I think it's suicide to do this. So the idea is you bring in people, they may be entomologists, they may be a biochemist in the Department of Plant Pathology. They don't really know about pest management of plant pathogens or even that plant pathogens are pests, but they're using them basically as model organisms, not really focused on contributing to the mission of the AES. Very successful individuals. Maybe they're good teachers, but they're bringing in lots of extramural support. And so they're satisfying this aspect, but here is where we have failed. We have failed dramatically. And the issue really comes down to the fact that because we have let this sort of slip, we've lost that connection to commodity groups, and that's, in a sense, eroded our ability to get back in touch with them. We have a lot of catch-up to do, and the idea now is that we need to continue those dollars coming into our research programs. But the idea is that we need to have this strong, and this needs to be strong as well. We have to have faculty members sort of walk this tightrope, if you will, with, in a sense, their feet in both camps. We cannot forget about this. So I generally meet with all the faculty that we hire in the agricultural sciences, and I sit down with them. I talk about both of these sides, but I really emphasize this. We actually now have a paragraph in our faculty merit and promotion manual that talks about the mission of the Ag Experiment Station, and we expect everyone that comes up for merit and promotion to have a little statement there talking about what they have done in terms of their appointment within the agricultural experiment station. So whether we can turn this around, you know, it may almost be too late, but still we're focused on that and the idea of trying to balance this while keeping, you know, these other monies coming in from novel sources is basically the tack that we are trying to take. So with that, I had more slides, and I think it's not fair because my slides took too long to load. But anyway, with that, I appreciate the chance to share this information, and we'll move on. So thank you very much.